Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio once again. It's almost time to put a plaque on the chair for Nate Wallace, the city manager of the city of Palmer. Welcome, Nate. Yeah, you come here a lot, and that's good because that means that we can find out what's happening. Things like starting off immediately thinking about the action just south of the Eagle Hotel, where there's now a flat space where once upon a time there was a Jensky auto parts or auto repair building. Yes. What's happening there? Do you have any sense of that?
I think they're rebuilding. Conversation I had several months ago was they were just sorting out with the insurance company, and they were looking to rebuild and
start
fresh, but it will be a fresh start with a new building. That building, I think, was built in 58.
There's rumors, yeah, that it actually built and didn't just grow up out of the ground.
Yeah.
A long time ago, they did a tremendous amount of work when it was BJ's before, and then Jensky took it over and continued to work. An amazing, one of those situations where the building from the outside looked very small, and I know they did a lot of work. A lot of vehicles passed through there, and I was always amazed at where or how they go in, they come out, they're fixed. But it'll be interesting to see if the new building matches the decor that we have established as the appropriate building in the city of Palmer, which leads me to my next question. You know, I've over the years watched buildings be built, and I know that architects, I know the Gary Wolf building, for example. Gary, architect, he designed his, paying attention to the surface quality of the panels, the colors, and so on. What guidelines, if any, does the city have about what you can or cannot do with the appearance of a building in the city?
There aren't, I'm going to grounds I'm not completely familiar with, but there aren't a lot of restrictions. Mm-hmm. You have to follow building code to build a safe building, but we don't have a historic district building code. It's encouraged. And what's interesting is walking over today, just La Fiesta has been repainted.
I noticed that.
And it's real similar to the other buildings surrounding it. So it's just, I don't know if it's peer pressure or just the nature of businesses fitting in. So they don't, I mean, you want to stand out based on your reputation, not necessarily on what your building looks like, but
right.
It's interesting on how our buildings in Palmer remain similar.
Right. I noticed and just that thing, because it had been a yellow and now it's a, I'm not sure what. Rusty red, yes. Which is, it's sort of consistent with some of the other building colors, if you will, yep. Around. And I know that, if anyone who has traveled in the Southwest or certain parts of New England, et cetera, there are without having, I think, specific rules, there are colors that work, yes. Adobe colors, et cetera, that work because of the climate or one thing or another, or white or whatever. In Palmer, I've walked around too. It has relatively low buildings, wide streets, a very interesting feel as compared to some other places I have been. But it sort of happens because people.
Well, the low buildings, there is a height restriction in Palmer.
Okay.
So that piece is directed. But when you talk about the color and being directive, there are places that do direct that you cannot have a certain siding, you must have these colors.
Right.
We did a kind of a survey last year with our newsletter, went to the businesses that had a business license in Palmer and asked them three questions. What's your specialty? Why are you here? And the why Palmer question, why are you here, almost resoundingly was because we love Palmer. It's a place I want to be. So it's not, I came here because there was a gap and I wanted to fill it with whatever my personality was. It was, I wanted to be part of this. So that, I think, drives a lot of it too.
Right. Okay. Well, let's finish up with the buildings here. We have, of course,
Fred Meyer's Inn. No news on the old Fred Meyer. I'll jump ahead. No. Jump in on that one.
Oh, no. No.
And it's not a campground.
It's not going to become a campground.
No, or an RV. Or an RV. We're trying to prevent it from becoming an RV pass-through. So if you see RVs parked there, that
how about,
folks are watching.
How about an indoor paintball import? I don't know. We've had these. I've listened to discussions, and people have still come around to say it feels like it could become a mixed use place with perhaps city offices, et cetera, and also some other things as well. Maybe even some more apartments on it. That are even taking into consideration the, using up some of the parking space, et cetera, et cetera. And the ideas that I have heard have said there must be somebody out there who's creative enough to look at that and see an opportunity and say, oh, okay, give the location, the present structure, be able to make an offer to Fred Meyer that would play out over time when you have to do a lot of rehabbing or reconstruction.
There's plenty of potential for that facility to be something other than an empty building, but I think it's the times. So if you look around Palmer, there's several large places that are for sale. The Eagle Hotel has for sale signs up.
Right.
The old ATCO building on Commercial has been for sale for a good long time, and that's, a good piece of property. Fred Meyer's, and then the old Chickadees is for sale as well. So I don't think it's because Palmer isn't the right place. I think it's just overall state right now. I think there's a lot of hesitancy to make large investments until things settle down. Palmer's pretty stable. Great place to be, but I don't think it's Palmer that's holding back anybody investing here. So those are large properties, large investments on somebody's part. And Palmer's a great place to be, but Palmer will, if the naysayers' predictions all come true and the economy goes like it did in the 80s, Palmer will feel that. And I think there's just people are watching. Those with the investment money and those with ideas still have the great ideas, but I don't know that they're encouraged enough by what's going on statewide to make a multi-million dollar investment.
Okay. Now, filling out the questions about properties, I know that the brewery, has it begun operation, the new brewery in the Matanuska Made?
My understanding is they want to start in July.
Okay.
I think all their equipment's inside. I think the inside stuff is probably pretty close to being operational.
Okay.
They're working quite a bit on the outside now. Now that the weather's good. And then right next to them, Alaska Pickers grand opening is tomorrow.
Tell me about that. What is that, Alaska Pickers? Is it true they went out to the Aleutians and brought back all kinds
of
stuff?
That's part of their business model is they go to these old places and salvage items that might be reusable, either as antique collectors or those that are just looking for something, a piece of history, clean it up and then resell it. They were located on the Palmer-Wasilla Highway, and now we were fortunate to have them to move into the city.
So what part of the property are they actually operating on? I mean, I know where the brewery is going to be, and was this property owned by someone else, or how did
I think it was the old ice house.
Oh, okay.
Between the old chicken coop and the dairy.
Okay.
The building that was back in there. It was a block house. I believe it was an ice house at one time.
Okay. All right.
But it's one of the old, it's one of the original buildings from that era.
Okay. And it opens tomorrow.
The grand opening is June 3rd, yes.
Wow. Okay. We'll see what that brings about. I think we've done most of the buildings. Progress on the airport, that seems to be...
It's well on its way. The construction bid came in well under what our original grant amount was for. It was a good project for a lot of folks, whereas our wastewater treatment plant was pretty specialized work, so we only got two bids for that one. The airport, we had, I believe, five, and all very competitive bids, but the type of work was what made, I think, brought the price down quite a bit. It's paving. A lot of folks can do that kind of work. So I was happy to see that. We're just now waiting on the final FAA grant to come through, and that work should start late June if all lines up.
Okay. And of course, talking about pavement, I also note that we have considerable painting that has been applied to roads all around.
It's an annual event that happens. We repaint a lot of the striping that fades, and some of it that's scraped away with the snow plows over the winter. We try to get it done, at least the downtown portion, before Colony Days, and then finish up the rest as time goes along. But yeah, it's amazing the difference it makes just in appearance for the area when you have bright, fresh paint on the road.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
I don't know if we're using something different on the crosswalks, but the crosswalks look a lot brighter.
They are, they jump out. I mean, I walk across many of them, and the white is whiter. I'm not sure why that happens, but that's true. Well, I did notice, though, that, let's see, I'm looking right out our window, and I can see that we have the white stripe on the side, which indicates an area where people would park, and then double yellow stripe down. What about a bike path striping, that kind of thing? Is that changing this summer in any way or beyond what had been done in the past?
No, it's not changing, but there are some bike paths that have not been painted for several years that have faded away. So Eagle Street is one. Chugach, South Chugach was one that was really faded all the way from Inner Springer or Springer down to Evergreen. So those are being spruced up again. We've had discussions about putting up pop-up bike lanes on pop-up dividers of some sort, just to make those even more visible. That's just kind of a work in progress, an idea that's been floated to make those bike lanes more visible. So nothing in the works to make anything permanent along those lines.
No,
working on some bike racks. Bike rack competition should be on the streets here pretty quick. Design competition.
Okay, right now there are only a few bike racks. I noticed a few posts with a few little devices on. How extensive will that bike rack layout be? I mean,
the competition is for a design of a two bike bike rack, and then a more than two, where you can do anywhere from three to six, whatever the design is. So there's instructions on materials and ease of construction for those designers.
Okay.
So that Public Works, or that we can have it sent out, contracted out for work. It's not a $10,000 bike rack. It's
okay.
Trying to still stay within budget. Also soliciting donations from businesses or folks that want to just contribute to having those built as well. But the public places, so they would go potentially at the library, the depot, and we have to be careful around the depot because it's pretty congested as it is where we put a bike rack.
Right.
Because it's more than the rack itself. The rack might take up 6 inches wide by 8 feet long, but then
sure.
You start putting bikes in it. Now you've
then they stick out.
You've taken up about 8 feet of space altogether. So it's the bike rack itself may not take up much room, but we have to consider all that. So the depot is a very well-traveled area and would be an ideal place to have a bike rack, but do we sacrifice the picnic table or a walkway or some of our grass space to put those in? So those are some of the considerations on where we put them. City Hall is another place. The skateboard park, MTA Event Center,
sure.
Places that are public. And then if the private sector wants to have a bike rack that fits in with what the city's done, what city selected, then these designs are available to take
so
anybody that wants to build a bike rack.
If you were a business somewhere in downtown Palmer, mm-hmm. Do you have to request a permit for a bike rack, or how does that work?
I don't. No, the downtown's part is tricky because part of the sidewalk is goes with the building and part of the sidewalk goes with the road. So there has to be a thoroughfare so that people can still walk down the sidewalk. So there's not every building in Palmer could have a bike rack in front, but there's potential for bike racks in alleyways and things like that. So it's, again, the way Palmer's laid out, it's a great downtown community where you can walk and ride and drive, but we're limited on where you can park your car, where you can park your bike, and that's just by space, not just by not having a bike rack. So it's something we have to consider when we go down these roads.
So this is the question I've asked the police chief too, and we've gone over, but in particular, the beginning of summer, and in particular, because there are advances in all kinds of devices. I'm thinking, for example, bikes generally should be on the road. I know at different times they're on the sidewalk. Mm-hmm. And it's almost time dependent. At 6 a.m. in the morning, there's nobody around, and people I see ride bikes on the sidewalks. Yeah. On the other hand, on Friday at noon, with Friday Fling and a lot of people around, riding a bike down the sidewalk is probably not a good idea.
Yes.
And then, of course, we have what I've noticed people talking about is electric power assisted bikes.
Anchorage is dealing with some of that on their bike paths, the non-motorized paths, and there's folks that have electric bikes. And I read at one time that there was some controversy over that. So it hasn't come to Palmer because we don't dictate how your bike is powered. Our streets are mixed use, as all streets are.
Right.
Our sidewalks are described as foot only. But there are times when you see bikes on the sidewalk.
But what about bike paths? You've raised the question, which might be coming up. It might not. In part, it's because there aren't a lot of them around. But I'm thinking if you get a large number of electric-powered bikes on the bike paths, and someone is using that as the assist, as I understand, they work simply. You still pedal, but you've got the little power thing going. Is this a powered thing, and do bike paths, I'm thinking of the bike path that starts at the depot and runs out or goes out to the Butte, where basically you don't run your four-wheeler, but what about your e-bike?
Wow. I don't know that any of our paths within the city are marked non-motorized. Okay. One reason we don't have to do that is because you can't drive your ATV in the city limits. So if you're driving an ATV on a bike path, you're in violation of something other than being on a bike path.
Okay.
Once you get outside the city,
it's a different
jurisdiction, different rules. So, yeah, in the city, I don't know that that'll become an issue with electric bikes. But it's something we do. Something come in the future. Yeah, we'll have to consider.
Very interesting. Now I know there's been.
It's like a wheelchair, motorized wheelchair.
Right.
Are we going to restrict those on bike paths?
Oh my!
I don't think so.
Well, let's see how
so we say motorized vehicles. I mean, it's more than just bicycles.
it's complicated, isn't it? It's just so complicated. Now I've noticed that there's been a recent wedding over at the Arboretum. That area is with the cleanup and the removal of the buildings in front of that area. The area seems to be. Is it scheduled for some work? Some groups that have been working to help trim the Arboretum trees and bushes and so on? Or?
I think that's already been done.
It's pretty much. Okay.
Generally around Arbor Day, which is in May.
Okay.
So that the cleanup this year is pretty much, the city will still continue to mow and do things like that, but any major work out there for the years is pretty much complete. There's a group, the Friends of the Arboretum, that continue to maintain that area, and there's trimming that's done throughout the summer, spring, and fall. But the major cleanup efforts is pretty much over. The building was taken down. UF took that down last year. The city cleaned up the brush piles that were built over the last couple of years. So that's gone. There's a concrete pad out there. We're going to try and clean that up as we can this year.
And the old white burned out little building, the west end of the crosswind runway is gone. And
there's no buildings left over on that.
Yeah, it's all
Arboretum.
Okay.
Section, and I haven't heard on when the winter a new building may go up on that corner.
Okay, so that leaves us with the ongoing negotiations, maybe already completed, for the Greater Palmer Fire Area with the negotiations between the city of Palmer and the borough. I know there's been some reports about that. What can you say? Where is that? Is it done? Everybody is settled?
I think it's done in concept. My conversations with John Moosey, it's just a matter of getting the language right.
Okay.
And our position is we're not a contracted workforce. There's some liability with that that we've seen in other communities where cities contract with other government agencies and then they lose their municipal liability.
Sure.
So we want to make sure that's clear. And it's always been the Palmer Fire Department using Greater Palmer Fire Service area equipment when they respond to a fire outside the city. So we just make sure we maintain our identity as a fire department. When we leave the city, we're still Palmer Fire. And that's whether it's just semantics in the contract or philosophy on how we see each other in this agreement, that's, I think we've come to terms with what that is.
Okay.
There's been a lot of talk that this is about dispatch. It started out that way because Greater Palmer Fire Service Area was dispatched through Palmer Dispatch, and the fire department was considered within that dispatch to be one big area. So with the disassembly of Palmer Dispatch, Greater Palmer Fire Service Area being a borough area, went with all the other responsibilities that went to MATCOM. So we asked that it be maintained as one area, and that didn't. The borough's position was, no, it's borough, it's going to MATCOM. Okay, great, fine, got it. But still, the remaining issue is
how to
Palmer Fire Department is Palmer Fire Department, regardless of where they go. So I think we've sorted through that, and it's just a matter of getting one or two words in the contract to match that, because we've been operating under our interpretation, which over the years, sometimes this crops up now and then, but
okay,
to make sure that it's clearly defined in the contract that we are Palmer Fire Department.
So any sense when it'll be finished, like with the final paper signed off and everybody saying, okay?
I imagine it has to get to the borough before July 1st. So
okay.
We'll continue to provide the service if asked without a contract. If we come to terms, again, in concept, I think we have. It's just a matter of making the language match. So the borough will have to appropriate funds to continue the service beyond July 1st, and I think they'll be able to do that.
So that leaves us with only the sense of the city toward the suggestion that there be a borough-wide sales tax.
That's a sensitive one. Yeah.
Yes.
And I think, and it's also bigger than just the borough sales tax. I mean, there's talk potentially that there'll be something introduced in the legislature for a statewide sales tax.
Right.
So any community that has a sales tax is concerned about an additional burden on its citizens, and then also the economics for the businesses in town in their community. So for us, we're at 3% or 3%. I won't say 3 mil, but that's property tax. We're at 3%. We'll sell it at 2. Potentially going to increase. I think there's going to be an initiative for Wasilla to increase to pay for a public safety facility, and then sunset like they've done in the past. But that's Wasilla. But we're pretty close to our neighbor, and then our big neighbor to the south has zero sales tax.
Right.
So it's not a huge difference because we're capped at $1,000, so the most you'll pay on a single large purchase is $30.
Right.
So is it worth it to go to Anchorage to make a large purchase for $30? You can save that much in gas. Those are decisions people are making, but if we are increased another 1%, 2%, 3%, it takes us to 6 and we'll sell it to 5, and now you're talking $60 versus 0. So is that going to change the way people shop? And I believe it does, and I think the rest of our community would probably see the same thing. So do we want to increase the burden on the taxpayer? Do we want to increase the burden on the risk to our businesses? Education is important, but how is it going to change the rest of the economy in the community because of that?
So the obvious question is, how reasonable or easy would it be to have a 3% borough sales tax that does not apply to incorporated cities?
I think it can be easily done. They've done it with marijuana.
Sure.
I think it's a 5% on marijuana in the first
three and 3% in Houston. Houston has... Well, that's interesting because
I think it's 5 and the first 3 stays in Houston. I think is how that works.
Well, there's Houston, I understand, has a 2% sales tax.
They're three, I believe they're three like we are. Three. Either, two or three, either way. But.
Yeah, and then a 3% marijuana tax for the city. Oh, this is complicated. We won't go there unless we have this stuff right in front of us. But the basic question is, okay, what if you do 3% in the unincorporated parts of the borough or the larger borough area? Mm-hmm. Just do it that way and leave the cities alone so that it becomes something of a level playing field borough-wide. So if you have an auto dealer just outside the city, it was still up to $1,000 or whatever the thing, pay their 3%. And it would,
if the borough writes that's a city cap for the sales tax.
Yeah, the borough, he could, a $50,000 truck, let me think, 3% is, that's a lot of money.
Yes.
Yes. So I suspect that would be hard to make happen.
And also what's taxed? The city, both cities tax groceries.
Right.
And I've heard rumblings that the state won't tax groceries. And if that's the case, that's going to...
Oh, then
that could override.
You brought that. That's right.
So there's sales taxes. It's interesting and scary, depending on how you get in.
Okay. We're going to leave that there as interesting and scary and say in the last minute or so we have any comments about...
We can talk about Colony Days.
Colony Days, best for last. Go ahead, talk a little bit about that.
So it's coming up. Cities, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of stuff we're doing is in preparation for Colony Days. That's kind of the kickoff, the big kickoff event for the summer. Lots of great things are going to be happening, 3-day event. We've got a run. We've got a bike race. And then all the things that just go with Colony Days from year to year. Our landscapers are out. Lawnmowers are
yep.
sprucing up the city.
Notice that.
Got a little bit of a late start. We should see the hanging baskets coming back out the next day or so. Well, maybe next week, Monday, since it's Friday. Had some concern with the weather, getting those things out in the cold that we've had. We've even floated the thought that we might wait until after Colony Days to put those out if it still remains cold, but the temperatures look like they're going to be in the 60s and 40s,
yep.
So we shouldn't have to. I mean, I don't want to make an investment in the beautiful plants we have and then have them only last a weekend.
Oh,
I mean, those things are supposed to last all summer.
That's right.
But it looks like they're going to get out. They're on hand. They're at the public works, so we'll start getting those out. The other piece is, it's a shout out for Grow Palmer. It's an organization that does a lot of planting, the edible trail and plantings throughout the city that you can eat. In partnership with the city, they're looking for some families to adopt some plots. So if you want to participate, if you're not a volunteer already, and you want to know more about the edible trail program and the edible greenery of Palmer, contact Grow Palmer either through their Facebook or at growpalmer@gmail.com. So they've got, I think, 8 plots still available for someone to adopt. And basically, that's to care for and make sure that they're growing as they should be. So it's a great volunteer organization. So
right.
They're looking for more volunteers.
They've done well. Well, okay, Nate Wallace, City Manager of the City of Palmer, thank you for coming in for another part of the Inside the City series. Have a good day out there.
Thanks, you too.